It is Wednesday, May 30th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The 2012 KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival continues with the Italian Serenade for String Quartet, Night Piece for Flute and Strings by the American composer Arthur Foote, and Brahms Clarinet Quintet, performed by the University of Arkansas Music Department faculty and guest artists, tomorrow night at 7:30 at St. Paul's Episcopal Church Parish Hall in Fayetteville. Admission is free. Information available at fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu. And KUAF is proud to co-sponsor Walton Arts Center's Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival, with the Chamber Music Series. From June 14th through the 21st, classical trios, quartets, and quintets will perform at various locations, including Thorn Crown Chapel in Eureka Springs, Cooper Chapel in Bella Vista, and St. Paul's Church in Fayetteville. More information available at artistspherefestival.org. Later on this edition of Ozarks, a photography exhibition that celebrates the life of Springdale artist Michael Clark Donat, and a new kind of party mixes friendship with art. But first, a new study by the Meals on Wheels Research Foundation finds seniors in Arkansas have the third highest risk of food insecurity in the country. The study says nearly 20% of the senior population in Arkansas is at risk of hunger. Leslie Roberts with CareLink, a nonprofit agency that works closely with Meals on Wheels, says hunger issues for senior citizens in Arkansas are a big part of a national trend.
You know, the number of older people in America is increasing rapidly as baby boomers age. And so there are more older people, and then, of course, you know, more older people that are hungry. And then, of course, the economy has played a role in it as well. The part of the population that faces food insecurity for financial reasons, that has only gotten worse.
She says seniors with walkers and wheelchairs sometimes have problems finding transportation to grocery stores to buy food and often have difficulty standing at a stove to prepare food.
You know, the number of older people in America is increasing rapidly as baby boomers age. And so there are more older people, and then, of course, you know, more older people that are hungry. And then, of course, the economy has played a role in it as well. The part of the population that faces food insecurity for financial reasons, that has only gotten worse.
The national study says the number of seniors experiencing hunger throughout the country increased 78% between 2001 and 2010. Another study places Arkansas at the very bottom of the list of bicycle-friendly states. The League of American Bicyclists finds that Arkansas is the least friendly state when it comes to bicycle transportation. Matt Wimpy, the head of state and local advocacy for the group, says Arkansas has the worst possible scores in most of the categories, including infrastructure, policies, and planning for bicycles. He says the state could better aid bicyclists by adopting a complete streets policy.
A policy within the DOT, the Department of Transportation, that's going to say when we look at designing roads in our state and in our communities, we're going to ensure that they are usable by everybody, not just motorists, but also bicycles, pedestrians, disabled people, senior citizens. It's really just ensuring that the design and the use of streets really match encouraging more than just cars.
He does say the recent passage of a law by the state legislature requiring a minimum passing distance of 3 feet when passing a cyclist on the road is a good step toward making the state more bike-friendly. Washington was ranked as the most bicycle-friendly state. A combination of interests from Northwest and Central Arkansas is promoting the state as an ideal location for film and digital production. The website ArkansasProduction.com will, among other things, promote potential production sites for the film industry. Beth McAvoy has this report from Little Rock.
The Arkansas Production Alliance announced the launch of its new website that they hope will promote Arkansas locations for films. Arkansas invested more than $2 million in the movie Mud, which is now earning critical acclaim after its debut last week at the Cannes International Film Festival. Arkansas Film Commissioner Christopher Crane says the more than $10 million film is the largest production to ever shoot in the state, and he says the Alliance's logo will be featured in the closing credits of Jeff Nichols' movie starring Matthew McConaughey and Reese Witherspoon.
We will have locations that will be submitted by each community. And those locations then will be searchable. When we get inquiries and when we're actually going after a production, we will look specifically at which locations we have in the state that meet those qualifications. And so it's an easy tool for every community to get involved.
Crane says the website cost over $24,000 to launch. The state is also offering a 15% rebate to production companies on goods and service spending. If productions use Arkansas-based crews, they will receive another 10% rebate. Crane says the incentives are recoverable. I'm Beth McAvoy in Little Rock.
Meetings to discuss a shift in operations for the Fayetteville School District begin next week. The discussions will center on the move in 2015 of ninth graders to Fayetteville High School. That move will cause a reconfiguration in the grades that will attend the district's junior highs, middle schools, and elementary schools the same year. The first of five public meetings on the matter will be held a week from tonight at Owl Creek School. There could be more rain for the region this evening with a chance of strong thunderstorms. The National Weather Service says the chance of rain tonight throughout the KUAF listening area, 80%. Some storms could include large hail and strong winds. The front is expected to bring cooler temperatures. Highs tomorrow expected to be in the 70s. Arkansas Razorback third baseman Matt Reynolds has been named to the All-SEC first team and the All-Defensive team for the conference. That's a team selected by conference coaches. First baseman Dominic Ficicello was also named to the All-Defensive squad. Arkansas will open play in the NCAA tournament Friday afternoon in Houston against Sam Houston State. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals begin a Texas road trip tonight in Midland. The Nats will enter the game three games out of first place in the Texas League North Division. This is Ozarks at Large. Michael Clark Donat was a photographer and builder of cameras, and he was an inspiration to many other photographers and artists in the region. He died in 2010, but his legacy will continue with a unique tribute next month at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. 20 professional photographers will each have an image in the exhibit, each of the pictures taken with one of Michael Clark Donat's handmade wooden pinhole cameras. Don House helped organize the event. He and Michael's widow, Lila, recently talked with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda about the artist's life and the exhibit that will open at ACO on June 5th.
Art exhibitions often showcase the work of a single artist, but during the month of June, an exhibit at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale will feature the work of 20 photographers in honor of one man. Michael Clark Donat was a local photographer who joined the Northwest Arkansas Times in the late 60s. He worked for them for several years before setting out on his own. In addition to taking photographs, he would process film of high school football games here in Northwest Arkansas and Oklahoma, and then deliver it to the coaches the next day so they could review the game. Lila Donat, who married Mike in 1972, recently came by the KUAF studio along with photographer Don House, who is organizing the exhibit. After moving to the area about 25 years ago, Don says it seems like Mike's life paralleled his because they worked in the same space and shared clients over the years. The exhibition at the ACO features photographs taken with a wooden pinhole camera Mike built. Don recalls happening upon the beautiful pinhole camera at Collier's Drugstore years ago and buying it. When he began printing negatives for the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History, Don says they had the best darkroom he had ever worked in. He soon discovered that was because Mike had the job previously and had donated an impressive amount of equipment to the museum. It served as a reminder that Mike was still in Northwest Arkansas, so Don contacted him, and about once a week, Mike would come to the museum for coffee and a chat.
What I didn't realize is that at that time, Mike had been diagnosed with cancer, and he was just starting treatments. And as those progressed, then I would start going to his house, and we just had a little ritual where he would supply coffee. And I would stop at the Spring Street Grill and get pecan pie or something. Or if we were very lucky, Lila would have made something and left it at the house and eat it. And so we would just talk for an hour or two at the house and talk about everything but cancer. I think that was the unspoken agreement. It was a chance to talk about other things, you know, in his life. This pinhole camera just stuck with me. It is such a combination of fine art and fine craft. And Mike makes every part of it, the metal, the wooden parts, the metal parts, and he assembles it, tests them. Lila knows more about that process than I do. But I decided that the pinhole represented a lot of things about Mike that I thought of being able to combine photography with, an ancient form of photography, really, in a way, with modern, old construction, modern construction, and then film, and kind of wrapped it up in one unit there of what I thought of as inventive and multi-talented. So there are a lot of photographers who knew and loved Mike and had dealt with him over the years. So I put together a list of photographers that I knew had interactions with Mike, and then also photographers who had not met him. Mm-hmm. And I wanted each of those photographers to take the camera that Mike had made, and without any input from me, no instructions really, it was just to take it, use it in the kind of photography that they enjoyed doing, but to use that camera. And then at the end of the year, it's been about a year or so in the making, that the only condition was that they had to make a print and give it to me ready to hang at an exhibition at the ACO that's coming up in June. And it's been great.
Now, Leela, when he came up with the idea for this exhibition, did he talk to you about it? Have you been involved in this process at all?
Yes, been involved since the very beginning. It was something that our family was really enthusiastic about. It's just such a great honor to have all the photographers take a picture with the camera that Mike made. And Don mentioned that I probably know more about putting it together. Actually, I only know the sound of the machines in the garage putting it together, because that's where all the equipment was. We never parked a car in our garage. It was just full of a metal lathe, all kinds of woodworking tools that I don't really know the names of. Mm-hmm. But, so late night sounds of all that equipment running.
Well, you've brought a pinhole camera here, Don, and it's this little wooden box, and it's got a little metal handle on the side. But can you tell me how it works?
Well, it does look like a piece of cabinetry, doesn't it?
It does.
It's just beautifully made. It looks like it's made from either mahogany or walnut. I think this is walnut. And really, a pinhole camera in its basic form is nothing more than a box made out of almost anything. And in one end of it is a very small hole, an extremely small hole that you can cover up. And on the back of it, or inside of it, you have a sheet of film or a piece of photographic paper. So in Mike's camera, it's a little more sophisticated in that he has a couple controls to be able to cover the little hole and a nice way of attaching film to the back of it, using a kind of a standard 4x5 large format film holder that photographers would be very familiar with. So in this case, and it's got a nice handle for carrying it, and in this case, film is loaded in the back. You set it on a tripod because the exposures are long. The hole is so small and without a lens present that it takes it a while for enough light to get through there.
Now, you said with this particular exhibition that you didn't really give them any rules. They just had to take the camera and take a photograph with it. So have any of the artists contacted you during the course of the last year saying, okay, well, I think I'm going to photograph this? I mean, was there any planning so that two people didn't, say, photograph the same type of thing?
No. There were a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. Some of the photographers, like today, I picked up a wonderful photograph from Tim Ernst, one of the photographers, who was able to figure out how to attach his digital camera back to the back of this pinhole box. And he had called when he had that idea to ask me if I thought it would be appropriate. And I told him, of course, and I thought that Mike would love that. And in fact, Mike would have been the one that Tim would have gone to figure out how to do that at one point. And so Mike would have loved it, and I did too. There's no conditions. Some photographers called and with questions because they haven't dealt with large format film. Mm-hmm. Many of them hadn't dealt with it in decades, and some had not used it at all. So this was new for them, and they loved it. I think they really enjoyed it. Every camera has a rhythm to it. 35 millimeter is totally different than this in how you approach a subject. And this is a slow, methodical, thoughtful kind of rhythm to it. And it's very pleasing. If you haven't done it before, you become addicted to it very quickly. It slows you down, and you evaluate what you're about to photograph a lot more than you would if you were shooting a smaller format.
Now, 20 photographers sounds like a lot for just one exhibition, but I think when you look at Northwest Arkansas as a whole and how many photographers, talented photographers that we do have. It's actually not that many. So how did you guys kind of come up with that list? Did you have any input, Leela, in kind of pointing him like, maybe ask this person? Or
I did have a couple suggestions of people I knew that did photography. And, of course, Don's in the trade, so he has a better handle on who all is out there.
How did you come up with your suggestions? Were they people that your husband knew, or
people that we knew and had worked with? One is someone I worked with at my work, and then some friends also.
And have you gotten to see any of the finished products yet yourself?
No, just that one, except the one that Don brought. It's the only one, and the ones Mike took, of course. But.
Right, and you brought in a picture actually of Mike's. That is that going to be in the exhibition?
That's actually going to be what I guess with the little panel that tells a little bit more about Mike and stuff, and it's a picture he took at the Greek Theater with the pinhole.
So what are you hoping people will take away from this exhibition, people that come and see it? Maybe people that aren't familiar with the pinhole camera, maybe people that weren't necessarily familiar with your husband's work?
Well, I know our family is going to come away with it, just the whole joyous celebration. We were really lucky, and at the time that Mike had cancer, he was diagnosed and died 2.5 years later, that I don't think he ever complained about anything. He was extremely optimistic, totally optimistic. And this is just, for us, kind of a pleasant way. I mean, you have to go through all the grieving stages, and this is a great way to think about all the happy times. So for us, that's what it means.
How about for you?
Well, a chance to honor Mike. I know that I have the luxury of being able to speak lightly about subjects that were gut-wrenching for Leela and the family. For me, honoring Mike it's like I guess you can honor a photographer by having his work in a collection of a museum. It may continue, but to me, having photographers using his creation to continue to create new art is a fantastic legacy. And there are cameras out there. I don't know how many he actually made. Leela may know that number.
Actually, I don't.
Well, dozens, perhaps.
I think probably maybe 40 at the most.
So 40 photographers out there, maybe internationally, I think one of his distributors was overseas, that are using his cameras in creating art today, I think is an amazing legacy. And I wanted people locally, I think in the region, the list of photographers is it's an impressive group for people who are following photography in this area. Tim Ernst, we already mentioned, Michael Pevin, Victor Chalfant, Andrew Kilgore, Kathy Mayhew, Jim Bailey, Richard Berquist, Jane Kellett, J.T. Wampler, Ron Lutz, Rick Green, Dan Wycliffe and Paul Williams from Colliers, Andy Shoup, Leslie Walker, Sabina Schmidt, I hope I haven't left anyone out, Joanne Jones. And these are photographers who have been serious photographers for many, many years. And having them apply their talents, I think, to this camera just means something to me anyway.
Don House and Leela Donat recently stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to discuss the Michael Clark Donat Memorial Pinhole Photography Exhibition, which will be on display at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale June 5th through the 29th. An artist's reception is scheduled for 6 to 8 p.m. June 7th. More information is available at artcenteroftheozarks.org.
Ahead on Ozarks, 4 days each late spring, the town of Ozark prepares for an invasion of sorts.
I think we'll get extra 1,000 vehicles Wednesday and extra 1,000 Thursday. Probably more than we want.
How the music festival Wakarusa changes things for one city for 4 days. Plus, it's part party, part studio session.
It's just a way for any age, any kind of group to come together and make art together and celebrate their friendship with fine art and fun.
An art party mixes social time with paintbrushes. Those stories are ahead on Ozarks at Large. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, May 30th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown. She is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I actually knew somebody whose Society for Creative Anachronism name was Hump. Hmm. It had a P and a K. I'm really random this week. Moving on, tonight.
Yes.
In setup for Wakarusa, the Delta Saints are performing at George's Majestic Lounge with fellow Waka acts Nathaniel Ratliff and the Monophonics.
I know people who have picked two of those three to be among their most anticipated shows at Wakarusa, so a chance to see them
here
without having to skip the shower.
Right. The show starts at 8:30, and Wakarusa starts tomorrow.
Yes, it does.
Apparently, they're expecting 150 bands on five stages, 200 sets of music. This is its fourth year in Arkansas. These are the numbers for Wakarusa. And in addition to music, they have disc golf, fishing, a new water slide. And the headliners are Pretty Lights, the Avett Brothers, Girl Talk, and Primus. I have no idea what I just said.
Yeah, I've seen Pretty Lights and Girl Talk. I enjoyed both shows.
Avett Brothers are fantastic, and Primus is very loud.
And I trust our music writer, Kevin Kinder, who told me to say those things. And he will be live on the scene, so if you can't go, you should follow him at nwatunedin.com. And skip the showers.
We're sending our own John Schloss down there.
He is going.
Oh, that should be exciting.
And
I bet the two of them will get into a lot of trouble. Don't call me for bail money.
All right.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The 14th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series begins Saturday, June 30th, with the Aaron Goldberg Trio. This series will continue with the Composer Showcase Saturday, July 28th, and guitarist Vic Juras Saturday, August 11th. Performances begin at 8 p.m. in Walton Arts Center's Star Theater. Tickets, including limited cabaret seating, available at 442-5600 or waltonartcenter.org for more information. More than 150 bands and somewhere around 20,000 fans will begin descending upon Mulberry Mountain in the next few hours for the annual music festival Wakarusa. The multi-stage event means the population for Franklin County swells for the long weekend. Ozarks at Large's John Schloss has this report.
Franklin County, Arkansas usually has about 18,000 residents. Beginning tomorrow and this weekend, the county's population will more than double when 20,000 attendees arrive at the Wakarusa Festival at Mulberry Mountain, north of Ozark. The large crowds from Wakarusa inject a lot of money into Ozark, which is about 25 minutes south of the festival grounds. Roy Skadis with the Ozark Area Chamber of Commerce described the town.
Well, it's a city, actually. We're just a little over 4,000 population, but I guess I would describe it as a wonderful place to live. I chose to move back here from a rather large city, and it's just a comfortable lifestyle for me.
I spoke with Gaddis on Friday, and he said that local businesses were already preparing for increased foot traffic.
Oh, absolutely. They're preparing for it now, too. When you start mentioning Wakarusa, they can practically give you the countdown of days to hours. It's a major impact to the local businesses, especially the restaurants, the fuel stops, the travel centers on I-40 at both exit 35 and exit 37. The liquor stores do a good business because they take their beverages up too with them.
Gaddis said he usually doesn't attend the festival, but that locals have bought tickets from the chamber, which is located at 300 West Commercial Street in downtown Ozark. A mix of empty buildings and small businesses line the streets downtown. A barber shop sits on the corner across the street from the chamber. Small retail stores and the town's newspaper line the streets around the square that houses the county courthouse. Most everyone in Ozark seems to know everyone else in the town. After touring the downtown area, I drove north again, towards Interstate 40 and Ozark's Walmart to meet the store manager. The Walmart isn't a supercenter, but is called a hometown store because it's smaller and has fewer groceries. It closes each night at 10 o'clock. While waiting near the customer service counter, I spoke with a young man who said he got a job working at Wakarusa, cleaning bathrooms, and it pays $10 an hour. He said he also got a ticket for the festival. Dee Combs, the store manager of Ozark's Walmart, told me that people from Wakarusa are obvious when they walk in. Some of them have dreadlocks and are wearing bathing suits. She said the increase in customers was nice. She just wishes that they wouldn't bathe in her bathroom.
We have noticed that they normally start trickling in over Memorial Weekend, and We've noticed a couple people that we haven't noticed here in the store before, actually starting yesterday. And the majority of them show up on Tuesday and Wednesday to get the good campsites, and then the festival goes full-blown on Thursday. They normally don't leave until Sunday night. We still have campers coming in Monday and Tuesday.
And when you say you see people that, I mean, because Ozark's a small enough community that you see most everyone you know?
We all know just about everybody, yes. And so there's a different, definitely Wakarusa brings in a special type of the younger crowd.
And I mean, you like it though. I mean, right?
Because we love it. We love it. It's just a nice mixture, and most of the kids are very respectful. They come in, they do their shopping here, and anything that they need, we try to get for them.
Besides offering the normal camping gear like tents and folding chairs, Combs said the store will carry more produce this year. Also, ice. Lots of ice. They'll have lots and lots of ice. Back in the town of Ozark, I wandered into the Ozark Inn and Suites, where I met Rick Patel, the motel's owner. Patel, who's been in Ozark for 3 years, said all of his 35 rooms are booked this year.
Yes, well, we booked from May 31st to June 2nd. We have booked last year, too. I've been here 3 years. So 3 years, every year they booked for 3 days. Well, there's a lot of people coming from out of country and out of state and all stuff, and they want to stay somewhere, you know. They want to sleep somewhere, so they're looking for a place to stay.
Gaddis, with the chamber, said the festival helps all aspects of the economy, not just retail.
Tom Houston, he's just a local carpenter, and he, before they come in, Dickerson Excavation, Crispin Ready Mix, all these outfits, these they're performing work services and materials and supplies and all that to build these stages and so forth. So it doesn't just affect the retailer.
Before Interstate 40 opened, the main route west from Clarksville was Arkansas Highway 64. Gaddis said that ever since the interstate opened, the city has struggled to capture the traffic that now travels 3 miles north of the city on Interstate 40. Ozark annexed the land near the interstate and slowly connected the area to the city's water and sewer systems. About 3 years ago, Russ Workman of Mulberry got a note from a guy who wanted to sell some property near Interstate 40 and Arkansas Highway 23. Workman, who owns the Hilltops Travel Center in Alma, bought the land and recently opened a truck stop north of Exit 35 on May 14th. Workman was taking a break outside and asked him what he was doing today.
I'm washing dishes and trying to schedule people to work and hiring people, and we're still hiring everybody that comes through the door.
Workman said he was planning on having a staff of about 40 to 50 people to run the store, which has a 24-hour restaurant and deli. They also have clean bathrooms.
We got 5 trucker showers, and we advertise on our billboards clean restrooms, and that seems to be working pretty well for us. And anyone's traveling is always looking for a clean restroom, and ours fit the bill. We put a little extra in them, but it'll pay off in the long run.
Workman said he was preparing for a lot of people coming off the interstate and heading north to Wakarusa.
I think we'll get extra 1,000 vehicles Wednesday and extra 1,000 Thursday. Probably more than we want.
A study produced by the University of Arkansas Department of Hospitality said 21,201 individuals attended last year's festival and spent about $14 million on goods and services, including gas, food, and lodging. The study also said that the event created an equivalent of 16 full-time jobs for the county. Here's Gaddis again with the Chamber of Commerce.
It takes about 80 jobs to move the unemployment or the employment rate in Franklin County 1 percentage point. We have a little over 8,000 a workforce. So it's not only in a benefit, I suppose, of them coming in and money being spent here, but there's employment developed from it also.
Gaddis said the area welcomes the economic impact of Wakarusa. He also said that he welcomes the attendees.
Well, we not only welcome them, but we have signage that we've had developed that we put up that says, "Welcome music fans, thanks for visiting," and they'll be going up this coming Monday, so that they'll be welcomed quite friendly, so to speak, and we're pleased to have them.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm John Schlois.
This is Ozarks at Large. Earlier this month, Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agni Hotri Madolkar got to be part of a party that mixes friend time with art time. It's called an art party.
I heard they broke up.
No, they did not.
Yes, from who?
I was looking online and I saw it.
Ali Guthrie, Lucy Brooks, Janet Allen, Hannah Weber, and Emma Gibson are gathered around a table, chatting among themselves while listening to music and working on their pieces of art. The five girls from Fayetteville High School have been friends for years. Today, they're having a high school graduation art party at Studio Leilani in Fayetteville. Local artist Leilani Law, who is helping organize the gathering, explains what an art party is.
It's just a way for any age, any kind of group to come together and make art together and celebrate their friendship with fine art and fun. But it really, what I bring to the mix that's different is that I'm drawing that authenticity out of the individuals at the art party, that we're not copying from or trying to look like another artwork or another thing, but really we're finding it inside ourselves.
Law says she's been doing art parties with her own friends for as long as she can remember. She finally decided to launch Art Party for Others through her studio in October of last year. The art parties hosted at Studio Leilani are inspired by artworks from the permanent collection at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. Before the start of each party, Law presents facts and stories related to the selected artist and artwork. The participants are then free to interpret the art in their own unique way. I ask Law about how structured she wants the process to be.
I want them to have an idea of how to mix. So I'm using like fine art materials like palette knives and acrylic paints and palette trays. So I want them to use real materials. And then I kind of start them out. I want them to have the freedom to express and to come to me, so I'm just really kind of guiding and hopefully starting a love for painting, maybe.
Reservations to host an art party at Studio Leilani are made 2 weeks in advance. Once a date is set and a list of invitees is finalized, Law then works on finding the perfect theme for a party. Ali's art party, for example, is based on the artwork of 19th century Austrian painter Gustav Klimt. Law chose the artist because his artwork celebrates the diversity of aging as a woman, a theme that works perfectly for a girl's high school graduation party. Ali describes the process of working on her piece for me.
Well, what I'm doing, we have pictures of ourselves, and we put them somewhere on these canvases over a palette of colors that we chose. And it's going to like describe, you know, like a transformation of ourselves throughout our life. And so now we just incorporate shapes and patterns, and now we're going to color over them, and hopefully it'll be a little like a journey of ourselves on this palette.
And while Ali and her friends are working on their pieces, Ali's mother, Sharon Guthrie, is working on hers. Her piece features a picture of her with Ali.
I kind of have crowns on each one of us, and maybe it's just an expression of her growth experience in the future, and my just being open to change, and a lot of tears on my side but lots of sunshine on her side.
Ali tells me it was her mother's idea to throw an art party to celebrate her high school graduation. I asked Sharon why she chose an art party over, say, a movie night or a regular party.
I just thought it would be a really good kind of fun, unique opportunity for them to deal with their transition and have fun at the same time. Just a way for them to express themselves and for me to spend time with them probably for one of the last times.
Artist Leilani Law, who's helping the girls create their art pieces, says the artwork created during an art party is sort of a timestamp, something that the girls will always remember.
You know, I said, well, you're going to go to the dorm room, and you've been decorating your room for a while, and then you go to the dorm room, and then you're going to have an apartment, and then you'll have a house. And, you know, it's so much more meaningful, I think. Or do you think it's meaningful when you have things that are made by other people or yourself that are handmade, and they're all like, absolutely. Well, it may start an art party where you make that connection with yourself. Or maybe they'll exchange these paintings that they made of themselves with each other.
When I asked the young girls why creating art together is important, Ali's friend Janet Allen is the first to answer my question.
You make memories in a lot of different ways and a lot of different experiences, but with this one, like, we've made a memory and we have something like tangible to hold on to and to take with us to college. And so that makes it really special and lasting.
To find out more about art parties and summer art camps at Studio Leilani, visit Studio Leilani, that is spelled as LEILANI.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Muthokar.
Mitt Romney looks to the Lone Star State to push him over the top. Republicans rally a week before the recall in Wisconsin, and after five terms in Congress, Thad McCotter can't gather enough signatures to get on the primary ballot in Michigan. He'll run as a write-in. I'm Neil Conan. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us, plus travel writer Andy Isaacson, me and my RV. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation, this afternoon at 1, right after Ozarks at Large. It has been, or is, a short work week for many, but it's not too early to start thinking about the weekend. War Eagle Appreciation Day will be held Saturday at Withrow Springs State Park in Huntsville. Activities include a family-friendly canoe float on War Eagle Creek, followed by food, educational exhibits, and live music with Jed Clabbett at Ham Pavilion, that's formerly known as the Crossbow, off of Highway 23. War Eagle Appreciation Day raises awareness about why it's important to take care of War Eagle Creek, which flows into Beaver Lake, and that's the lake that supplies drinking water for more than 400,000 Arkansans. For more information, you can go online to bwdh2o.org. And the Flower Garden and Nature Society of Northwest Arkansas will host the 15th annual Through the Garden Gate Tour Saturday as well. That takes place Saturday from 9 until 4. Seven private gardens will be available for viewing. Tickets are for sale at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks on North Crossover Road in Fayetteville. The tour benefits both the Botanical Gardens and the FGNS program series. For more information, you can call 521-9298. Joe Neal, our birdman, talks crow. And after returning from an exceptionally private expedition in the famous Lost Valley on the Buffalo National River in Newton County, he has some crow for us.
Lost Valley on the Buffalo National River can be a very, very busy place during hiking season. But I was there recently when, late in the afternoon, everyone had gone home. I have Lost Valley all to myself. Well, not everyone. I was there, and so were the crows. That said, it was, in my experience, the quietest in 30 years. A miracle, really, and I give thanks, and turned on my sound recorder. The following recordings are from that April afternoon. But first, I need to give you a crow call primer. Two species of crows were present. Our standard American crow sounds like this. During the warm months, we have another species called fish crow. It sounds like this. See if you can pick out the two species in this recording. Of course, on a quiet day like this, crows don't have Lost Valley to themselves. Here's a blue jay related to the crows, who perhaps is tired of all the crow species back and forth. Even with the crows and jays, it was so quiet in Lost Valley that I was able to distinctly hear other species. I won't wade too far out into the ornithological weeds here, but I heard barred owls hooting from several directions. plus at least three warbler species that had recently returned to the Ozarks. These included ovenbird, northern parula, and yellow-throated warbler. You can hear some of this in the following recording. I can't say for sure whether or not American crows and fish crows like one another. But since American crows are bigger and live along the buffalo all year, I assume they rule the roost, so to speak. But all this back and forth crow talk makes me think the big boys must make room with spring arrival of fish crows in the Buffalo Valley.
Joe Neal is co-author of Arkansas Birds, published by the University of Arkansas Press. His latest book, In the Province of Birds, a Western Arkansas Memoir, is published by Half Acre Press. This is Ozarks at Large. Imagine not being able to read or write. One Arkansan decided to reach out to his local literacy center in hopes of improving his quality of life. Ozarks at Large's intern Zesna Garcia has this story.
Adult illiteracy in Arkansas is a real concern. According to a study done by the National Institute of Literacy, 20% of the adult population in the state of Arkansas is considered illiterate, which means 20% of Arkansans are not able to help their children with schoolwork, pay for their bills, or understand basic contracts. The inability to read and write correctly can make it difficult to function in a fast-paced society. In the fall of 2008, Joe Arnold came to the Literacy Council of Benton County. After working many labor-intensive jobs, Arnold knew that in order to be promoted to a higher position, he had to attain his GED.
I came to the Literacy Council, and Jennifer Vandiver tested me to see where I was at on my reading level. And my reading level was somewhere around between first and second grade. It wasn't very high.
Joe Arnold, now 54 years old, was struck by lightning when he was 10 months old. The year was 1958. Though Arnold survived the incident, it left him completely blind in his right eye and with a brain cyst the size of a baseball, and he developed a learning disability.
I went to the Pea Ridge schools. I guess I started in about 1962 or 3 and went till 1970. They did not know what to do for me, so they just kept passing me from class to class.
Once Arnold's test results came in, the Literacy Council found a tutor for him. All of the Literacy Council's tutors are volunteers from the community. Each tutor must complete a training session before they are paired up with a student. Arnold was matched up with now-retired former vice president of Walmart, Charles Ratliff. The executive director for the Literacy Council of Benton County, Vicki Ronald, says that the volunteers are there to teach and assist the students, but the students are their own motivators.
The students themselves set their goals. When they come in, they might say, I just need to learn enough to be able to pass the written driver's license exam. And we'll work on them with that. Of course, along the way, they start wanting to learn other things.
Use USE.
That's right. No hurry.
Ratliff became involved with the Literacy Council after attending a Rotary meeting where a student from the Literacy Council gave her testimony on learning to read. Ratliff attended a volunteer tutor meeting. He was soon certified. He and Arnold began to meet twice a week to work on improving Arnold's literacy level. Both Arnold and his tutor were aware of what he was capable of achieving.
At one point, I remember we put everything aside, and we had a little more of a heart-to-heart talk on what we're trying to accomplish. And I said, Joe, why are we here? Because we're not making any progress. He said, I need to get a GED because I need another job. had him tell me a little bit about what he did, and then I stopped him when he explained to me that he had passed a hazardous materials test, because he showed me the book, and it was very, very complicated. I said, okay, how'd you do this? And he said, I had somebody read it to me. I memorized the answers. Mm-hmm. And I knew then he was a smart guy.
But I don't want to play the bottom.
The Literacy Council, along with the Northwest Technical Institute, worked with Arnold's needs and put together learning materials in order to prepare him for his GED exam. Before Arnold would begin to study, he took a practice test to see where he would score before he would take the actual GED test. Without studying, Arnold scored high enough to take the entrance exam. After many hours of hard work with his tutor and much support from his family, Joe Arnold was finally ready to take his exam. In the spring of 2011, Arnold took the final portion of the exam, and on July 18th, Joe Arnold walked across the stage of Springdale High School to receive his diploma.
When I walked across the stage, it made it all worthwhile because I never did graduate high school. So when I walked across that stage, it was just the thrill of a victory, I guess you'd say, to know that I'd completed my GED, something that I'd worked so hard for, and to see my name in the program, I guess. I was the second one across the stage, and I'd had a broke leg at that time, and I was on crutches, but I wouldn't have missed it for anything in the world.
Arnold continues to go to the Literacy Council to improve his writing skills and is a proud advocate for the Literacy Council of Benton County. For Ozarks at Large, this is Zesna Garcia.
If you'd like more information on how to become a tutor, you can go to goliteracy.org for the Literacy Council of Benton County, located in Bentonville, or ozarkliteracy.org for the Ozark Literacy Council, located in Fayetteville.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 30th of May, 2012. It was on this day, 1849, Henry David Thoreau published himself his own book, A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers. It was his first book, an account of a two-week trip that he'd taken with his brother John 10 years before from Massachusetts to New Hampshire and back. The two brothers were very close. Henry was the introverted, studious one. John was more gregarious and fun-loving. John helped to pay his brother's tuition to Harvard. He helped Thoreau open his own school when he was fired from his teaching job because he objected to corporal punishment. A few years after their boat trip, John Thoreau died unexpectedly from tetanus. He died in his brother's arms, and Thoreau decided to seclude himself. He started building his cabin by the bank of Walden Pond, lived there for 2 years, and he completed the drafts of both A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers and a series of lectures that would eventually become his classic Walden. Since the book A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers was rejected, he was only able to publish it by paying for its printing from its sales. And 4 years later, after he paid off the printing debt, Thoreau wrote in his journal that his publisher had delivered the remaining unsold copies to his home. He said, "I have now a library of nearly 900 volumes, over 700 of which I wrote myself." Here's a poem for today, lines from a long poem by Ron Padgett entitled How to Be Perfect. Get some sleep. Eat an orange every morning. Be friendly. It will help make you happy. Hope for everything. Expect nothing. Take care of things close to home first. Straighten up your room before you save the world. Then save the world. Be nice to people before they have a chance to behave badly. Wear comfortable shoes. Do not spend too much time with large groups of people. Plan your day so you never have to rush. Show your appreciation to people who do things for you, even if you have paid them, even if they do favors you don't want. After dinner, wash the dishes. Calm down. Don't expect your children to love you, so they can if they want to. Don't be too self-critical or too self-congratulatory. Don't think that progress exists. It doesn't. Imagine what you would like to see happen, and then don't do anything to make it impossible. Forgive your country every once in a while. If that is not possible, go to another one. If you feel tired, rest. Don't be depressed about growing older. It will make you feel even older, which is depressing. If you burn your finger, put ice on it immediately. If you bang your finger with a hammer, hold your hand in the air for 20 minutes. You'll be surprised by the curative powers of ice and gravity. Do not inhale smoke. Take a deep breath. Do not smart off to a policeman. Be good. Be honest with yourself, diplomatic with others. Do not go crazy a lot. It's a waste of time. Drink plenty of water. When asked what you would like to drink, say, "Water, please." Take out the trash. Love life. Use exact change. When they're shooting in the street, don't go near the window. Lines from a long poem by Ron Padgett, How to Be Perfect, published by Coffee House Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Barnes & Noble, maker of Nook, Simple Touch with Glow Light, designed for reading with the lights on or off, available at Barnes & Noble stores or Nook.com. Edited by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas, Springdale, and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. All offer local shopping opportunities through NWA Deal Piggy and Ozark Deal Piggy. Registration and more information available online at nwadealpiggy.com. Support for KUAF also comes from the Malco Theater's Kids Summer Film Fest, beginning June 5th and continuing through August 1st, each Tuesday and Wednesday morning at 10. Seating is limited, so early arrival is recommended. The Malco Kids Summer Film Festival schedule and more information available at malco.com. You can donate your car, truck, boat, or RV to KUAF, and the proceeds from that sale of the vehicle will go to support the programming on your public radio station. It doesn't even have to run. You'll receive a tax receipt, and we'll pick it up for free. To arrange a pickup or for more information, 877-411-3662. You're listening to your public radio station, KUAF, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Figure 5, serving as your NPR affiliate for the past 28 years. You can listen at our website, KUAF.com. If you're interested in any of the musical pieces you hear during an edition of Ozarks at Large, would like to hear the show again, or would like to hear or share individual pieces on Ozarks at Large through Twitter, Facebook, or any other number of social media applications, you can do all of that at our website, OzarksAtLarge.com. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums, back tomorrow at noon with another brand new edition of our program. Have a great Wednesday.